All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 23 of the Dunk Dynasty podcast. I hope you enjoyed the theme song playing. It's the first one, first try go around. This is the first shot at it to see how it sounds, how the people enjoy it, whether or not people like the theme song, they don't like the theme song. Just a nice little intro to give the episodes other than just hearing my voice of, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Dunk Dynasty podcast, new episode. But yeah, lots of fun stuff here. The playoffs have finally started. There's some enjoyable stuff. It's good. You know, we enjoy 82 games of the regular season and we wait. And all we're doing is we're waiting to see in the playoffs. And indeed, we have seen game ones begin in the playoffs this weekend, just gone over here in New Zealand. We're actually fresh off some game ones that finished today, the Pelicans and the Thunder. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, coming up clutch. He's up for clutch player of the year and showing exactly why coming up clutch. Whereas on the other side, CJ McCollum, you know, not so clutch. The Pelicans go down 1-0. But looking at these series here, I think we expected the West to be entertaining. And it very much is entertaining. It's fun times, man. It's fun times. You love to see it. Me and myself, though, riding solo tonight. Riding solo, Jason Derulo. They call me, yeah, Jason Derulo, you know, riding solo, but it's all right. We shall have everyone back at some point in time, but it's all right. Taking the reins, taking the horns, a single. It's got to have to be. It's going to have to be a solo one, solo effort, 1v20, 20v1, like Drake has been saying with his diss tracks against Kendrick Lamar, Metro, Boomin, Future, and the rest of them at the moment, but it's okay. But it was good. It's good. It's been enjoyable. One of the things I did enjoy, one actually not enjoy too much, was I enjoyed watching the game, Lakers versus Nuggets. Let's start off with the heavy hitter, the main event. I think of all the series, this one is probably the one that's got the most hype behind it, probably because it's a rematch of the conference finals in the West from last year, but then also because, you know, you've got LeBron James, the big name, LA Lakers, the big market team, going against the Denver Nuggets, the defending champion. So, of course, it is the marquee matchup. Game one, Nuggets take that one 114 to 103. It was, looking at that game, it's, I'm a Los Angeles Lakers fan, a LeBron fan, but in being that, one thing I won't be is I won't be delusional. And looking at that series, I think the Lakers, sometimes in life, someone just has your number. UFC fans will know. Israel Adesanya fought Alex Pereira in kickboxing. He couldn't beat him in kickboxing. Two times, lost to him, knocked out. Oh, no, he lost by decision. Then he got knocked out. Fought him in MMA, he got knocked out. He was 0-3. Yeah, he got him the fourth time, but still, the first three times, Pereira just had his number. The Lakers have now lost to the Nuggets 9 straight games. I think it's at some point in time, you just have to realize that they just have your number. And it's not an indictment on the Lakers to say that they're not a good team. They're a good team. They won a lot of games this season. You know, 47 games, I believe that it was. But sometimes you just run into someone, something, or a team that just has your number and is better than you. And unfortunately for the Lakers, I look at this Nuggets matchup and I look at it and I see that what the Lakers have to do to win, I don't think they can do four times in a series. Because my keys for the Lakers, when I was looking at the series, I was saying, one, it's going to be defensive effort. Two, it's going to be, can you stop transition offense? And three, how are you going to minimize mistakes? How much can you minimize your mistakes in the game? Because you're going to make mistakes, 100%. But it's how you recover from those. Can you recover? Can you continue the game? Keep yourself in the game when the offense isn't going. Minimize mistakes defensively. Minimize mistakes offensively. And I just don't think the Lakers were able to do that in game one. And considering that they would now have to do it 4 out of 6 times, it's hard for me to see it. Even as much as I love LeBron James, it's hard for me to see it. I can't see that happening 4 out of 6 times. It's very difficult, especially with what, even if you go to game 7, 3 of these games still need to be played in Denver. And the Lakers, I actually thought, started off their game really well. They started off really well in that first quarter. And just the first quarter, the first half, they looked really good. But then in the second quarter, when the Nuggets started coming back, I was looking at it going, the Lakers, not just the Lakers, LeBron and AD have scored 38 points combined. And the Lakers, before LeBron James hit that three to end the half, were tie game with that. And it came down to, it's like, hey, dear, LeBron are putting it all out there, 100%. Okay, it is what it is. But the rest of the team couldn't come with them, you know? And I think that's maybe just Denver's defense. Probably is Denver's defense. D'Angelo Russell, 6 of 20 from the field. You know, it's hard to overcome that. There's some good defensive schemes, though. I did like the blitzing of Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. I think blitzing those two, it's a good strategy. You obviously want to get the ball out of their hands, but I think what was quite difficult that the Lakers, I don't know if they anticipated it or didn't anticipate it, is that, well, Jamal Murray was making some really good plays off that when they were doubling him. And it comes back to the effort thing, which is because if you come and you're blitzing that pick and roll, you're putting your team in a 3-on-4 scramble drill. And that's where it comes back to effort. Do the Lakers have the effort to go into 3-on-4 scramble drills over and over and over and over and over again for 48 minutes? Do they have the focus to do that? Effort and focus. Do they have the effort to do that? And do they have the focus to lock in, not make mental mistakes? If you're closing out, don't jump up because MPJ will pump fake you. Just dribble to the side, shoot the ball. Same thing as Jamal Murray would. What's his name? KCP can do that as well. They both can do it. Off the bench, Peyton Watson, you know, if he's going to hit multiple threes in the game, there's nothing you can do about that. But mental focus is going to be a massive thing for Lakers. Effort's going to be a massive thing. And it's just looking at what they have to do and how many times they have to do it. Four times. Four 48-minute games they have to do that. I don't know if they can do it. And LeBron James came out with a comment and he said, there's no room for error. And it probably is a comment directed at everyone, but it feels like maybe D'Angelo Russell. D'Angelo Russell had a position there where the Lakers go in transition. I think he throws a wayward pass, and all of a sudden, I think the Nuggets came back down and scored, and now the momentum is back in the Nuggets. It's just mental, small bits like that that are going to be key in the series, that the Lakers can't afford to lose those moments. And they lost that moment, then they lost the momentum, then they lost the game. And going back to LeBron's comment about there's no room for mistakes, it reminds me of Deontay Wilder when he fought Tyson Fury. This is boxing. So Deontay Wilder fought Tyson Fury in boxing. They fought each other three times. So first fight, Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, they drew. Second fight, Tyson Fury beat him. Third fight, Tyson Fury beat him again. However, in those fights, Tyson Fury was dropped four times by Deontay Wilder, who is probably one of the hardest hitting heavyweights ever. And Deontay Wilder had a quote that he said to Tyson Fury, which was, when you fight me, you have to be perfect for 36 minutes. 12 rounds, 3-minute rounds. You have to be perfect for 36 minutes. I have to be perfect for 1 second. Because why? He's got the ultimate detonator in his right hand. The point there that I want to focus on in that sentence is you have to be perfect for 36 minutes. No room for mistakes is what LeBron said. They have to be perfect for 48 minutes. And they have to do that four times. As I said, I like LeBron. I like the Lakers, but I'm not delusional. They're not doing that four times. So in saying that, obviously, I think it could be a competitive series. They could maybe steal a game. They've lost 9 straight times. So it's obviously, in hindsight, it's tough to say. But it's been one game. So you can't say, oh, it's going to be a sweep. But I think the Nuggets ultimately, I believe, will win this series. I think the Lakers can probably get a... I think minimum they'll get one game. A minimum they will get a game. I don't know if they can get two, maybe three, force a game seven. But I think they can definitely get one game. But I think overall... of all the teams that played game ones, I'd say them and the Magic are the two teams that I look at and I say, I don't see you winning your series. So, yeah, I mean, game one, you never want to overreact, but the Lakers, that's the way of the land, you know, tough game one loss. And I think, I don't see a scenario that they can win that series. But moving on, moving along to some other games that we saw on the opening day of the playoffs. The first game of the playoffs, actually, which I know a lot of people don't really, aren't really caring about this series. The Cavs and the Magic. This feels like a grinded out, hard knocks, hard nosed series. And I don't know. I'll speak for the New Zealand fans at least. You know, this game was on at 5 in the morning in New Zealand. So I think, don't know what time that is over in America, but I think that should tell us that this is not a prime time game. This is not a game that the NBA values much as a prime time one. I don't think it's going to be one that's going to be is going to have high viewing either. But yeah, I mean, you got to give credit to the Cavaliers. They came out their game one at home and won by 14 points. Home court advantage proving, which I'll talk about later on, proving to be pretty massive. You know, every single home team won 8-0, but the Cavaliers, they started off the right way. I think it was a bit interesting because one thing I think is going to hurt the Magic in this series is the thing that hurt the Cavaliers last year in the series when they played the Knicks, which is that when the Cleveland Cavaliers played the Knicks in the first round last year, what I believed lost them the series was their inability to shoot the three ball and hit the three ball because they had... They didn't have George Niang, and they didn't have Max Strus like they have now. I think the Magic are in a similar scenario that the Cavaliers were in last year, which is that they don't have the shooting that it's going to take, I think, not only to beat the Cavaliers, but to go anywhere, really, at this point in time. They can. They do have the ability, but they're going to have to obviously go out in free agency, go get shooters, similar to how the Cavs did it. For the time being, though, this year, if we're talking about this series, I think this is a tough series for them to win. Colin Coward came out and he said it himself. The biggest thing for the Magic, or the toughest thing for the Magic, is that if the Magic go down, they're not coming back. They're not coming back because most teams in the NBA have the ability to, if they go down, they can come back by knocking down the three ball, get some threes going, hit the three ball consistently, and get themselves back into a game with the three ball. The Magic try come back into games with twos. If they can't get their offense going inside and they have to rely on the three ball, they can't do it. Banchero, I know he hit two threes, 2 of 7. I know Franz Wagner hit 2 of 6, but the rest of the team, I look at it, Jalen Suggs, is he a sniper? Not really. Cole Anthony? Not really. Markel Fultz? Not really. Jonathan Isaac? Not really. They're lacking the shooting that it takes to win, I think, at this level. Defensively, they have the defense. They show that they have the defense because they held the team to under 100 points. Now, I know 100 points. Oh, okay, they lost the game by 14. They only scored 83. But just talking about defense only, they held the other team to 97 points. They played pretty good defense. Offensively, though, where are the points going to come from? You know, because especially if you're going against a team that can protect the interior pretty well with Evan Mobley and Jarrett Allen, if you can't pull either of those guys out of the paint with shooting, they can be in the paint, out the paint. Just make sure they're maintaining the 3-second rule. And when you come to the basket, they're there to meet you. So it's going to be a difficult series unless you can pull Mobley or Jarrett Allen away from the basket. It's going to be a difficult, difficult series. And the fact that the Magic just don't have the shooting, in my opinion, to pull either of them away is going to make this series tough for them. I won't overreact to game one. I'm not going to, as I said before with the previous series, the Lakers and Nuggets, I'm not going to call a sweep, but definitely I'd say this could be, I'll say six games because I feel like the Cavs will win game two. And then I think the Magic will probably get one, maybe two at home. You know, obviously the Orlando Magic will be pumping that theme song, Orlando Magic. Oh, you know, they're going to be going wild over their first playoff game in a while. So I think they can maybe get one or two games at home. But I think the Cavaliers after that will wrap it up. If they've got, like, if they steal a game in Orlando, I think they'll wrap it up in game five in Cleveland, but if they don't, I think they wrap it up in game six in Orlando. But looking at the next game that came up, which was, I think this is probably one of the other series where the lower seed is favored over the higher seed. which is the Timberwolves versus the Suns. Pretty great game. Pretty good game to start us off. It was a Sunday over here in New Zealand, so it was a great way to start the series off. Unbelievable game. Unbelievable game. I know, obviously, it ended up being a blowout in the end, you know, but it was a really good game. I think that this series is going to be very interesting because in the first quarter, the Minnesota Timberwolves in the first few positions of the game had Karl Anthony Towns on Kevin Durant. And essentially what the Phoenix Suns were doing was they were saying, Yusuf Nurkic, you come and screen Karl Anthony Towns. And the Minnesota Timberwolves were willing to switch their action and put Gobert on Kevin Durant. So Kevin Durant was able to get himself into rhythm pretty early and get some shots in because Rudy Gobert on him. And I'm sorry, you know, Rudy Gobert, he's probably about to become a four-time defensive player of the year, but against Kevin Durant, that's, as Shaquille O'Neal would say, that is barbecue chicken if you switch Gobert onto Durant. And Durant did an excellent job, got himself into rhythm nice and early. And then they started to make a few adjustments. And then Kevin Durant, I think after he started off, I think three or four from the field, went 1 of 6 his next six shots. So it was a little bit, they made it a little bit tougher for him, started making some adjustments. But I think the biggest thing that I sort of saw in that game was the rebounding, which it comes down to the size that the Minnesota Timberwolves have. And the commentators mentioned it over and over and over again, but we could see it with our own two eyes. This team is a big team. They're a very, very big team because you've got Anthony Edwards, who's what, 6'5"? You've got Karl Anthony Towns, who is 6'10", probably 6'11". And then Rudy Gobert, who's 7'2". And then you've got Jaden McDaniels, who is 6'9". Then off the bench, you've got Carl Anderson. He comes on, he's 6'8". Naz Reid, he's 7-footer. So they've just got size after size after size that's coming into the game. And they're not losing the rebounding battle defensively. They're not allowing, you know, the Phoenix Suns to get any offensive rebounds, not getting any second chance, not getting any second positions. And then on the other end, though, the Minnesota Timberwolves, I think, grabbed 14 offensive rebounds. They were just grabbing offensive rebound after offensive rebound. Now, obviously, size plays a factor into it, but I think when it comes to offensive rebounding, I think it's a lot of effort. Can you box out your man? And there was plenty of times there where the shot went up, Anthony Edwards would come on the weak side, get the weak side rebound, and just grab it because Kevin Durant was thinking maybe the ball's going to fall to me. Devin Booker, the ball's going to fall to me. But what happened? Jaden McDaniels, Karl Anderson, Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards all got just offensive rebounds just because of having more effort, hustling for the ball. The ball's falling. Now I'm not going to let it fall in your hands. I'm going to tip it. Just tip, see what I can do. Whatever I can do to get the ball away and tip. And then all of a sudden, the ball's in my hands. We have a second position. And they're able to score off that because now, boom, give us a second chance to score. Boom, we do. It's tough. It's a lot of effort. It's just the playoffs comes out to effort. It's a lot of effort plays. How many effort plays can you make? Because you're going to make mistakes, 100%, but how can you overcome those mistakes? You can do that by just 1% plays, those small plays where you go and you make. Big-time plays aren't always the three-point shot or big-time dunks. Big-time plays sometimes are offensive rebounds that get you a second chance position, and you're able to score off that. That can be a big-time play. Big-time block. There is just momentum plays all over to be made. And I think the Minnesota Timberwolves, especially with the offensive rebounding, were making the right plays offensively, getting themselves second positions, and they were able to capitalize on that as well. Looking at the Phoenix Suns side, Devin Booker, you know, it's a tough game one. It's a tough game one. Looking at Devin Booker's game one, I'm not overreacting to that. Not at all. Absolutely not. I think this is a guy who's averaged 27 points in the playoffs. Come on. He's averaged 27 points per game in the playoffs. I think last year he was over 30. This is no. As good a defense as the Minnesota Timberwolves play, with all due respect, you know, doing that to Devin Booker, I think multiple more times in a series, you know, to hold him to 5-16 shooting, he's still at 18, which is great, but I don't think you're going to hold him that bad of shooting again in this series. I think you see last year what he was capable of doing. Maybe you can say, oh, okay, you know, they had Chris Paul to kind of get them into the flow of things, get them the flow of offense. They had DeAndre Ayton, who was, you know, maybe because he had other better talent around him last year, maybe made it easier. No, but I just don't think you're going to be able to hold him to that again. I think Devin Booker is good enough. I think he's got that dog at him enough, you know, to come back, and he's going to recover. And I think he's primed, I'd say, for a big time game two. I'd even dare say it. I think Devin Booker might go out there and drop 30 points in game two, because I think he looks at what Anthony Edwards did, and I think he looks at the way that he played, and he goes, all right. The battle for, hey, it's the battle for being the best two guard in the league is wide open. I don't think anyone has got a strong grasp on being the best two guard in the league. So, Devin Booker, this is your chance, man. Anthony Edwards is 1-0 up. The Timberwolves are 1-0 up. How are you going to respond? Show us what you got. But major coming out party for Anthony Edwards. I think that third quarter where he was starting to chirp at Kevin Durant and he put the three symbol, three signal up to Bradley Beal to let him know. Yeah, I think last season in that series against the Nuggets, it was a good coming out party for him. But I think this season now is the third seed. You know, now they got the home playoff game. The crowd was going insane. You had Justin Jefferson in the crowd. Shout out Jay Jettis. It was lit. Minnesota was lit. Oh, it was going off. It was fun to see, man. And it's led by Anthony Edwards. And bro, they played incredibly well. I think they played tremendously well in that first game at home. For a long, long time. But the big shout out I actually got to put out, I thought it was going to be Naz Reid who was going to be the big time player off the bench for the Timberwolves. NK, was it NAW? Nickeil Alexander-Walker. What a game. That guy is great to see. It's great to see. He's one of the guys that I think we all said on this podcast, he was going to be the guy that was going to be big time for them. You know, if him and Naz Reid could play well, the Timberwolves are dangerous because they got additional scoring coming off the bench. And not only that, he's not a slouch on defense either. Nickeil Alexander-Walker is not a guy that you can attack defensively. He can more than hold his own defensively. And if he's able to hit that three shot consistently, the Timberwolves could be dangerous. They really could be dangerous. They really could be dangerous. But yeah, hell of a game from Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Now the focus shifts to the Suns bench. Who's going to be the guy that gives you that performance? Who's it going to be? Who are they going to be able to plug in there to have a big time performance? We shall see. But we move on to a series that was looking a little bit like it was going to end up being a sweep, because the Sixers looked like they'd lost Joel Embiid for the season. In the second quarter or third quarter, I believe it was, Joel Embiid went up for the putback, self lob dunk, and then comes down hard on his knee. And I'm looking at that, I'm thinking, oh Lord, this is not how it's going to end for Philly. Don't let it be like this. Don't let the season end for Philly like this. But thankfully, Joel Embiid comes out in the second half. Albeit he's not 100%. We know he's not 100%, but he came out, he toughed it out. And you know, I mean, they came back. You know, I think they were down almost 14 points when he went off at one point in time. He comes back on. They clawed their way back all the way to tie the game. And the game goes into the clutch. And obviously the Knicks pulled it out. But obviously some big time performances there on the Knicks side. Josh Hart, I think he's had an excellent regular season ever since Julius Randle went down. And then obviously I know they traded for OG Anunoby, but OG Anunoby came in, missed games. And in those games that he missed, when it was just Jalen Brunson, Dante DiVincenzo, and Josh Hart himself, it was the Villanova squad getting back together. They were keeping the Knicks, you know, alive. And obviously Jalen Brunson's the one who got the bulk of the credit, which he's more than due for, because he had a hell of a regular season, nearly 29 points a game. But it's not a one man game. It's not a one man team. And there was plenty of guys. Dante DiVincenzo, I think third in the NBA in threes this season. And then obviously Josh Hart, you know, you've got a guy out here who's 6'7", 6'8". He's averaging, you know, I think double digit rebounds since Julius Randle went out. And he was fantastic for them. I think the Knicks, similar to, I think, who was I saying earlier? I was saying it earlier about one of the other teams, that if the guy hits threes, that they're almost unstoppable. Neither here nor there. I'll remember it soon. But yeah, this is the thing, right? If Josh Hart is hitting threes, there's not much you can do. I know on the scouting report, 100% Philadelphia, like, listen, if Josh Hart beats us with threes, hey, we did our best. What can we do there? But I don't foresee Josh Hart shooting and making four threes again in the game the rest of this series. But, you know, he did his thing game one. Hell of a performance. Hell of a performance. And I think the Knicks, you know, they did big time. But one thing I will say, though, about the Knicks, especially the Knicks fans, stop this Knicks in four. It's not happening. We all are saying Knicks in four. Come on, guys. You guys are chill out. Every single year, the Knicks get to the playoffs. Every single year, you overreact. It's like the Dallas Cowboys in American football. You overreact. Buddy, it's one game. You guys can't be screaming Knicks in four after one game. You guys are going to pipe it down. New York, sometimes this is why you can't give New York nice things. Ask Kai Cenat that. He will tell you firsthand, you cannot give New Yorkers nice things. You gave them a nice thing in a game one win, and you gave them an inch. They took a mile. They're out here screaming the streets Knicks in four. But winners get to brag. Losers got to shut up. And they are the winners of game one, so they can brag all they want to. But it was a great performance, I think. Also on the 76ers side, same thing as Anthony Edwards sort of having his coming out party, even though I thought he did have a coming out party last year too. Tyrese Maxey comes out game one. He has a hell of a performance, 30-plus game in his first playoff game as being probably the number two guy. You know, obviously they had Harden last season, so he probably wasn't the solidified number two guy. But I think now, especially with the improvements that he's made to his game, he's an all-star. The expectation is now there for him to perform to that high level. I think he came out, he's fantastic. First, you know, playoff game as being really that one of the guys, like the main dudes that the other team is scouting for. I think he played tremendously well, albeit in a losing effort. One thing I was surprised about, though, a lot was the New York Knicks were targeting Tyrese Maxey a little bit. I think Jalen Brunson especially, you know, obviously the Philadelphia 76ers started off that game, you know, wanting to have a big defender on Jalen Brunson majority of the time, whether that was Tobias Harris or whether that was Kelly Oubre Jr. They wanted to sort of have a big body on Jalen Brunson at all times. And it felt like the Knicks were actually trying to get Tyrese Maxey into actions to be guarding Jalen Brunson. So I think they definitely saw something there where they said, you know, Jalen Brunson can go to work on Tyrese Maxey a little bit. But I think the Philadelphia 76ers did an excellent job of always, you know, whether or not Tyrese Maxey showed and then they try to get back to his man, or even when he just had to straight up play Jalen Brunson, he was able to do it. Or sometimes they would pretend like he's going to be in that one-on-one matchup. They'd bring a blitz over. And I think they did an excellent job of that, because I think Jalen Brunson, obviously the Knicks got the win, but Jalen Brunson, though he had the points in that game, shot 8 of 26. So if you look at that, you go, man, we forced Jalen Brunson to shoot 8 of 26. You know, that's pretty good on us, but how are we going to, you know, obviously now you look at, you stop Jalen Brunson, but Josh Hart went off as well. So it's looking at that balancing act where you always have to give up something in the playoffs. You're just going to have to give something up. And Philly have said, yeah, we're willing to sort of, you know, lock in on Jalen Brunson and see if you other guys can beat you. And game one, the Knicks' other guys were able to beat them. Now, looking forward, I'm like, I don't know if you guys are going to be able to do that. And the way I see it, I'm sort of looking at Philadelphia like, this is a game that you could have won. You kind of let them get away with one a little bit there. Late game execution, I think the Knicks were able to execute better in the end. Also, shout out to Miles McBride. Hell of a game. Same thing as Nikhil Alexander Walker. You got a guy coming off the bench who absolutely just goes off and turns it up, you know, hitting big time threes for the Knicks, and just a guy who was awesome, able to make impact. And that's tough to beat, man, when a guy comes out and makes an impact like that. So, but that's the same thing I look at. I'm looking at it to say, are these guys that beat you going to be able to do that three more times? I just don't think so. Josh Hart, is he going to be able to do what he did again? I don't think so. Miles McBride, is he going to be able to do that? I don't think so. But it's to be seen. But there's a lot of optimism if you're a Philadelphia 76ers fan. Shut up. Last game of the day, obviously the Lakers-Nuggets game, which I talked about at the top of the podcast, so we can skip that one out. We can move on to today's games, which today's Monday, the 22nd of April, day before my birthday, actually, 23rd of April, tomorrow, my 25th birthday. So if you listen to this far in the podcast, I hope, if you actually did listen, send me a message and say happy birthday so I know you made it this far. But let's move on to today's games. The first early game was the Miami Heat versus the Boston Celtics. Very, very tough series for the Miami Heat if Jimmy Butler is not available, which I think they've already said that he's not going to be available for the series because he's going to be re-evaluated in however many weeks. And I don't think it's going to matter because I there's no way the series, I think, goes beyond five games. It could make it to five. I personally think this series might end in four, purely because I think the Celtics are just on a revenge mission here against the Heat and I think against all of the East for last year. You know, I think with Jimmy Butler, this series was going to be already very tough for the Miami Heat. Without Jimmy Butler, it's probably 10 times harder. And Bam Adebayo, I know he tried to put up an effort. Jaime Jaquez tried to put up an effort. Tyler Herro was, you know, a little bit of a letdown in that game, but it's a tough series for them to win. And I think Tyler Herro obviously had a tough game today, but I think he might have a tough series because there's no Jimmy Butler now. There's no Jimmy Butler, which means that the Boston Celtics can really just boom, narrow down, just be straight up. We know who we have to focus on. It's Tyler Herro and Bam Adebayo. And particularly for Tyler Herro, he's probably in a very, very difficult spot because the Boston Celtics have Drew Holiday. They've got Jaylen Brown. They've got Jason Tatum. They've got Derek White, capable defenders who Tyler Herro has to go at the entire game. And it's a tough matchup for him. It's really tough matchups for him all around the board. And if Jimmy Butler was there, Jimmy Butler would be able to take the attention off you. He'd be able to get someone else on you. But you are having to go against four really good guard wing defenders who are all not slouches. They're no slouches on defense. And because they're able to zone in on you, just narrow down on you, know that you're essentially the guy, it's going to be tough for him. You know, shot 4 of 13 today, had 11 points. I think it's going to be a very tough series for not just Tyler Herro, but the Miami Heat. Even on the inside, Bam Adebayo, he's going to find it difficult, you know, because they've got Kristaps Porzingis. Porzingis also is not a slouch defensively. I think the Heat are going to try a few different things to keep themselves in the series. Obviously, they've got Eric Spoelstra, who's arguably the best coach in the NBA right now. But I think you can use a lot of adjustments, as many adjustments as you want. This series was going to be tough with Jimmy Butler. And as I said before, without Jimmy Butler, it just gets that much harder because Tyler Herro, they're just going to be able to zone in on him. And it's going to be a tough series for him, especially because he's the chief playmaker. But also, they know that if you're the Boston Celtics, and if I'm looking at that team, I'm like, really? I'm just going to run all these guys off the three-point line. Duncan Robinson, I'm running you off the three-point line. Beat me off the dribble. Kevin Love, running you off the three-point line. Beat me off the dribble. So who's going to be able to beat me? You know, obviously, you see this game here. Bam, had 24 points. The rest of the team, it's the balancing act is there. They've got a little bit of scoring. Jaime Jaquez gave you scoring. You had DeLon Wright give you scoring. But if DeLon Wright and Jaime Jaquez are going off, if you're the Boston Celtics, I'm like, that's a success because I know I'm really focusing on two guys that I don't want to beat me, which is Bam and Tyler Herro. Defensively, it's a tough ask for the Heat because I know defensively they've got some really good schemes, but the Boston Celtics have got, I think, 8-man rotation that I think it's very hard for any team in the NBA to better that 8-man rotation. Drew Holiday, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Derek White, Kristaps Porzingis, Peyton Pritchard, Sam Hauser, Al Horford. It's hard for me to think of a better eight. Probably I'd say the Clippers, fully healthy, they've got a core eight that's probably equal if not better than them. The Nuggets, I think, have got the best five. I just don't think the next three are as good as these other two teams, the Clippers and the Celtics that I've mentioned, in terms of having the best eight. It's very tough. So you look at the Heat, it's, man, Hayward Highsmith, you know, putting up but laying an egg there. It's tough for them to come back. It's going to be a tough series for the Heat. I know they preach Heat culture. They're going to grind. They're going to have grit and grind. I think they can steal maybe a game, but beyond one game is very difficult for me to see. I'm not saying that. It's not even an overreaction to game one. Before the series even began, I still had that same reaction to say, I don't know if the Miami Heat can win more than a game in the series. And I very well could see a sweep. If a sweep happened, wouldn't be surprised one bit. But credit to the Celtics. You know, the Celtics here, I think it's crucial for them to not play with their food. That's the main thing, because health is always a massive thing. You'd never want to extend series longer than they have to go. And I think the Celtics are going to be, this year, are going to be driven more than probably any other year, where I think they, if they can take care of business early and they have the ability to beat teams, go out there and smoke these teams. Don't waste time. Don't make games closer than they need to be. Go out there and stomp on teams and get yourself out of the first round and go wait for your opposition in the second round. That's how it should be. That should be the mentality. Make sure players are healthy. Beat teams as quick as possible. And game one, great start for the Boston Celtics. Shout out Jason Tatum. Triple-double. First triple-double of the playoffs, I believe. I'm pretty sure that was the first one, unless he had another player. I don't think another player had a triple-double, but great start to the playoffs for him. This is a big-time playoffs for Jason Tatum. I think this is a player that, Jason Tatum, that we, all of us on the podcast said, he's the player under the most pressure going into this, into these playoffs. Now, obviously, he started off the playoffs with a triple-double. Great, great stuff. But, you know, we're not really going to judge Jason Tatum about what's happening in the first round against a Miami Heat team that wasn't very good in the regular season and is missing Jimmy Butler. We're not going to judge Jason Tatum on that. Where we're going to judge Jason Tatum is maybe the next series against probably the Cleveland Cavaliers and the series after that, whoever they're facing in the conference finals. And if they make it to where we all think they're going to make it, we're going to judge him on his second NBA Finals performance and, you know, how he plays there. Because the first one, we know what happened. Andrew Wiggins clamped him up. Time number two, second chance. What are you going to do? So, obviously, congratulations on the triple-double in the first round, but all, we all know what we're waiting for to judge Jason Tatum. We're waiting for the finals. That's where we're really going to judge him and see what he's like, what he's about. But credit to the Boston Celtics. Game one, didn't play with their food, went out there, took care of business, and up 1-0. On to the next one. Game two of the day, which is Luka versus the Suns. Luka and the Suns. Luka and his Suns. They weren't his Suns today, though. Weren't his Suns today. Yeah. The Clippers came out. The Clippers came out and they definitely gave them the business in the first half. I think down 26 points, though, being able to claw back and only lose by 12. Obviously, you know, they lost by 12. They still lost by double digits. Not excusing that, not making it seem like it's great to lose. They still lost. They still lost the game. However, for the Clippers, a little bit, you know, worry. You're up by 26 and the league has dwindled all the way down to 12. It's like, hey, guys, you know, where are we? But I think it was a great win by the Los Angeles Clippers. You know, that was a, it's with no Kawhi, they were the underdogs on all the sports books had them as the underdogs. And not only did they come out there and play, you know, in the first half, at least they played, you know, like obviously they played like a team that was well in the race to be the number ones in the, oh, sorry, that was well in the race to be the number one seed. That's how well they played in the first half. The second half, I felt like they slipped a little bit, but I feel like also in the second half, the Dallas Mavericks actually realized that they were playing a playoff game and not a regular season game. And they raised the intensity. And once they brought their intensity, I think it was like, okay, boom, now we've got a game. For me, it's a hard game. It's a hard game to judge. You know, obviously you had Kyrie and Luka, they played extremely well, but you look at the rest of the team, it's, you know, the contributions, I think, were a little bit, you know, wayward. They weren't really there the same way that they were at the end of the regular season, you know. Or actually, yeah, when they were making their run at the end of the regular season, that probably wasn't there. That the third, fourth guy being there, you know, from PJ Washington to, Daniel Gafford being there, you know, there wasn't that same contribution. But game one, you never want to overreact to game ones. You never want to. But the main thing that I sort of got from this was the fact that the Dallas Mavericks clawed it back for 26 to 12. They were up by 26 points. You only won by 12. If I'm looking in like that, you could call me glass half full, delusional, maybe, whatever. But I'm looking more so, if I'm concerned about anyone, I'm concerned about the team that was up 26 and only won by 12 than I am about the team that lost by 12. Because it shows me that in the second half, what I saw was adjustments from the Dallas Mavericks. What I also saw was they've raised the intensity to the level that it should have been at the start of the game. Now, can they go forward? Can they do that? Game two, three, four, five, six, seven, if we make it to game seven, can they do that? I think they can. I think one thing, though, with the Clippers is, Paul George, you kind of need to show up here, you know, a little bit. I know the Clippers got the win, 100%. The Clippers got the win. The main thing is the main thing, which is you want to win games. But Paul George is going to have to be it's going to be a little, have to be a little bit better than, you know, 8 of 20 from the field. I think so. You're going to need to get a bit of, bigger contribution from him. Game one, James Harden, though, you know, is proving to be game one, James Harden is proving to be one of the greatest players of all time over the last 2 years, though. You know, he gives you a Michael Jordan performance in game one yet again. I think last year against the Celtics in game one, was it the game 44? May have been 44, 40 something. I feel like he scored 44, maybe 45. He had a big time game. But game one, James Harden, you know, hey, is this a new mythical character, mythical player that has been unlocked? Great game one for him, for James Harden. Can he maintain that aggressiveness? Can he maintain that consistency the rest of the series? Because if the Clippers are to go to the conference finals or the NBA finals or win it all, they're going to need James Harden to be extremely aggressive, not just as a passer, but be an aggressive scorer. Because when he's an aggressive scorer, I actually think that opens up his passing more. Because I think when he tries to be too much of a facilitator, not only is that a detriment to the team, because it doesn't open up the game that the way that it should be, should he actually be aggressive as a scorer, I actually think that it's also detrimental to this facilitating game, because there's games there where he'll only have 12 points, but he'll have 11 assists, but he'll have 5 turnovers. You know, those sort of games. Whereas when he has games like he had today, the turnovers were very low. For James Harden to have one turnover, guys, come on, you know this. This is magic. This is best case scenario, because there were situations there where James Harden, when he was the main guy in Houston, he was up there with Russell Westbrook every single year for the turnover title. And when he's aggressive as a scorer, especially with this team that they've got here, I think it just opens up that game, that pick and roll game that he's got with Zubats. It opens up his, sorry, it allows him to get, when he gets 2 feet in the paint, James Harden, he's able to facilitate, get the ball out to shooters. Guys can knock the ball down. It's there. He just has to be aggressive. It's a very tough series here. It's a very tough series to pick a winner, because both teams just have, well, the Mavericks have got Luka and Kyrie. Both guys had 30-plus points, you know? But the Clippers seem as though they've got more guys that can sort of go off there. You've got Norman Powell. You've got, obviously, James Harden. You've got Paul George. You know, Zubats had a massive game today. Zubats is really going to probably enforce his size in this series. You know, Daniel Gafford, I think, is going to have to come out. He's going to have to match intensity. He's going to have to match the intensity, because him and Lively, they're going to have to match, because Zubats is a big boy. Zubats is a guy who, you remember, in the regular season gave Jokic trouble in the games that they played against each other. I think Jokic had probably the worst shooting game of his career early in the season when he played Zubats. Zubats is he's big, and he can use his size. No, did he? He can use his size to, you know, enforce his presence. And he did an excellent job to do it today. If he can do it the rest of the series, it's a lot of trouble for the Mavericks. Very fascinated to see how this is going to play out, because I think you're just looking at no Kawhi. If Kawhi's not there, can the Mavericks steal a game in LA? I very well think that the Mavericks could steal a game in LA, game two. But the rest of the team, as I was saying earlier with the Orlando Magic, who's going to come and join Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero? Who's going to come join Kyrie and Luka at the party? Is it going to be Dante Exum? Is it going to be Gafford? Is it going to be Live? Who is it going to be? Is it going to be Tim Hardaway? Who's it going to be? Someone, PJ Washington? Who's it going to be? Someone has to be there to be on the ride with them and be that third guy. Because obviously, yeah, you got 65 points from your two best guys. You scored 97 points. So you're telling me the other 10 guys? I don't know how big the rotation was. How big was the rotation today? Okay, the other... Oh, wow, it actually is. All right, well, garbage time, but we won't really include garbage time. 7 other guys who played big, heavy minutes only got you 32 points. That's a bit worrying. So who's going to be able to come along with those guys and help them win the series? It's going to be big-time key. On to the next game, the Indiana Pacers and the Milwaukee Bucks. Very fascinating game, because in the regular season, the Milwaukee Bucks got absolutely spanked by the Indiana Pacers. I think the series was 4-1 in the regular season. So in the regular season, they gave them a nice little gentleman sweep. Not the case, though, in game one of the playoffs. The number 3 seed Milwaukee Bucks come in. Oh, no, not even come in. They host the Pacers and get the W, which is a pretty good win, 15-point win. I thought they played actually really well for the first half. Same thing as the Clippers. They played really well in the first half. But for the Indiana Pacers, you know, they were coming back in that third quarter. They were making a little bit of noise in that third quarter. I was thinking, oh man, the Pacers, Are they going to claw them down to get the W? But the Milwaukee Bucks were able to sort of, yeah, make sure, steady the ship, get the W game one. Damian Lillard, 35 points in the first half. Damian Lillard, 35 points to end the game. That's right. Damian Lillard exploded in. Bro, no dirty. No dirty. Damian Lillard goes off in the first half with 35 points. Doesn't score in the second half, though. Not sure how that happened, whether he went cold, the defense stepped up, but very cold second half for Damian Lillard. But that first half, it looked like he was about to go for 70. Not just 50, 60. He was bang on about to go for 70. And no second half there for Damian Lillard. Tyrese Halliburton, though, it's a very interesting playoff debut because it wasn't the best. 9 points, you know, this Indiana Pacers team, obviously, you know, Pascal Siakam, hell of a game, 36 points. He played really great there. But my concern for the Indiana Pacers coming into this series, not just the series, but the playoffs as a whole, is that the playoffs are when the game slows down in the playoffs. The game slows down in the playoffs. Whatever you try to do, the game will slow down in the playoffs. You're not going to be able to play with the same pace that you did in the regular season in the playoffs. It's just not going to happen. We've seen multiple times over the years, teams that were led the league in pace, they come to the playoffs, pace slows down. We've seen it multiple times. We've seen this movie before. And with the Indiana Pacers, I feel like they play with so much pace that in the half court, when the game slows down, if they're able to be slowed down in transition and you force them to play in the half court, they can struggle a little bit because I'm looking at it, I'm like, man, you know, guys, what are we doing offensively? You know, offensively, there's a bit of lulls here. And I think that's why Siakam, I think, was able to have a great game. Not only because Siakam is a really good player, a really good scorer, they're able to find the mismatches for Pascal Siakam. I think for Pascal Siakam, if he doesn't have Giannis guarding him, I think every other matchup on the Milwaukee Bucks is barbecue chicken. You know, Pat Bev, if he switches on, too small. Beasley, too small. And then you've got Lopez and Portis, who are too slow. Middleton is too small. Oh, sorry, Middleton and Portis and Brook Lopez, too slow. Middleton, Beasley, Beverly, Lillard, anyone else, these other guys, too small. And I think he was able to capitalize on that. And he was just able to, same thing as he did a couple of weeks ago in the regular season to the Clippers. If you put the wrong matchup on Pascal Siakam, he's more than happy to punish you. And he was able to go out there, punish the Bucks. Unfortunately, they were just not able to get the win. But obviously, it's a big game. It's a big game for the Milwaukee Bucks. No Giannis. It's game one at home in the first round, where last season, you lost in the first round, I think in five games last season. So it was crucial for them to get off on the right foot, and especially because they ended the regular season terribly, absolutely horrendously. So it was key for them, I think, confidence-wise to get this W. I think if they'd lost, I think it would have been, oh, Lord, panic stations a little bit, even though it would have been just one game, it would have been panic stations. So I think it was good for their confidence to come out game one, a team that's beat you four times in the regular season, including the play-in. It was good for you to just come out there, confidence booster at home, take care of business and put a number up onto the board, the series board. And now they've got a game. Now I think for them, it's got to be key because Giannis, we don't have a timeline on Giannis. The timeline on Giannis hasn't really come out. We've got the calf injury. We obviously hope that he's back at some point in time in this series because obviously you want to see one of the best players in the league be available. But without him, they did a hell of a job. I think Bobby Portis has shown time and time again, he's a serviceable player. He's a serviceable starter. We saw it last season when Brook Lopez was injured for spells. He came in there and started with Giannis, had a hell of a season. This season, when Brook Lopez missed them, when Giannis missed them, he came in, he did a hell of a job. He's a great NBA player. He's got the ability to come in, he gets rebounds, he can score, he can shoot three ball. Shout out to Brook Lopez, though. I didn't know Brook Lopez could still get up like that. You know, he got up and got a little bit of a poster. I think it might have been on Andrew Nimhart. Tough. I didn't know that. I thought it was just a Splash Mountain now. I didn't know that, you know, Splash Mountain could still get up, you know, to the top of the mountain a little bit, but it was good. He got up to the top of the summit. Get yourself a dunk, Brook Lopez. Get up. Hell of a dunk. Good job, man. But and then the last game of the day, you know, a series that I think I was really anticipating a lot if Zion Williamson was going to be healthy. But even without Zion Williamson, the Pelicans came out and did a hell of a job. you know, to just narrowly lose by two. Obviously, last play of the game, they had a chance to win with CJ McCollum, but, you know, the clamps got put on a little bit there. And boom, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, as I said, first thing I mentioned on this podcast, he comes out, he's clutch. Rightfully nominated for Clutch Player of the Year. You know, he'd done his thing. I think earlier this season, he's done it against the Denver Nuggets. He did it against the New York Knicks as well, I think in Madison Square Garden, and now does it at home in a playoff game, you know, as the number one seed against a team that played extremely well in the New Orleans Pelicans. And, you know, tops it off a game, unbelievable game. I think 28 points, you know, may have been 30. I think it was 28. Yeah, I think 28 points. Tops it off extremely well. Great game. Great game. Well, the Pelicans, though, that's a tough game for Brandon Ingram. I know Brandon Ingram has just come back from injury, but 5 of 17, 10 points, you know, with no Zion Williamson, he's a guy that, you know, he's going to need to step up. And Brandon Ingram is a guy who's more than capable of stepping up. He stepped up in 2021, I think it was, when they played the Suns in that first round. That was his coming out party. He's more than capable of doing it. I think he's going to do it. This is just a little bump in the road. He's just come back from injury as well. It's something that we've got to remember. I think this is only including the play-in. I think this is about his sixth game back. So obviously I know conditioning-wise, rhythm-wise, he's getting back into the swing of things. Obviously he's going to have to do it a little bit faster. I don't think he was able to do it today, especially he was not anywhere near the level that he needs to be for them to challenge in the series, especially without Zion. But I think this is same thing as I said with Devin Booker. I think he's good enough and more than capable enough to come back in a game two and have a big game. The Pelicans have got a great opportunity in this series, I think, to really pull off the 1-8 upset. I think in the East, obviously last year was the first time we got the 1-8 upset in a long time when the Heat beat the Timberwolves. Heat beat the Timberwolves. Oh my God. I mean, the Heat beat the Bucks. When the Heat beat the Bucks. So there's a great opportunity again this year, I think, for the Pelicans to do it. I think the Pelicans have got a really good team that they have. They've got the size, I thought, was going to play a much bigger factor on Shai. I thought that, you know, having Trey Murphy, having Herb Jones, you know, able to guard Shai, I thought that was sort of going to cause him a little bit more problems. You know, if I saw the line come up for Shai before the game at 28 and a half points, and I was thinking, I was like, oh, man, I'm going to go big time on the under. He scored 28, so we just beat the unders. Shout out the unders on that one. But, you know, I definitely didn't foresee him scoring 28 points, but I think that shows you how good of a scorer he is. Obviously, he didn't do it probably to the same efficiency that we're used to seeing from Shai, 11 of 24, but it was still, you know, 28 points is 28 points, whether it takes you 24 shots, whether it takes you 38 shots, 24 points, 28 points is 28 points. But it's a good start for OKC. I think same thing as the Bucks. I wouldn't say it was going to be as catastrophic as the Bucks. The Bucks have lost, but I think for the Thunder, it probably would have been a little bit of a confidence denter if they had lost that first game today against the Pelicans. So for them to come out and win that game at home, your first home playoff game, I think in a long, long time, probably since the Russell Westbrook and Paul George era, possibly, for them to come out there and get the W was massive, not just for the city of Oklahoma, but for that team, for the confidence. I think it's massive. It's huge for them. And now sets the stage for them to, you know, can they go out there? Can they win the series? You know, I still look at the Pelicans. I think that the Pelicans have got, both teams have got a tremendous amount of depth. I think you saw that the Pelicans really try to use the size today. I think, what's his name? JV, Jonas Valanciunas, or Travis Kelce's brother, Jason Kelce's brother, son of Donna Kelce. Had a tremendous game, 13 points, 20 rebounds. Hopefully you guys all bet the over on the points and rebounds. But he was a monster. You know, they really couldn't stop him. I know Chet's going to have a struggle on that. And that's why I think if they had Zion, I think the Pelicans really would have caused, you know, Chet some problems, because defensively, if Chet has to deal with Zion, you know, you're getting some fouls there, man, because Zion goes at you hard. He comes at you in the paint, man. He makes you make a decision. You're going to try to block me and put yourself in foul trouble, or you're just going to stand up there and be vertical. And, you know, it's good, though. I think for the confidence of, the Thunder, as I said before, for them to come out there in game one and get the W is massive. There was a few things in there, though, where I'm like, I can see it. I really can see the Pelicans pulling off the upset here. I think they've got the tools for it because, you know, I think Herb Jones and Trey Murphy, the length that they provide, especially with Brandon Ingram as well, defensively, they've got a tremendous amount of length. And the key in this series, in my opinion, I know Trey Murphy can hit shots. I know CJ McCollum, he's inconsistent, but for the majority of the time, he can hit shots. You know, Brandon Ingram, he can hit shots. The guy that's going to be the key for me is Herb Jones. Because if Herb Jones, I think the two X factors are Herb Jones and Josh Giddey for the Thunder. If Herb Jones can hit the three ball and play great defense for the Pelicans, I think they can win the series. Because Herb Jones, obviously, he's worked on his three-point shot, the three ball. He's worked on that for the last couple of years. He's become a better three-point shooter, more capable. You can't really play him off the court now. If he can give you a consistent three-point shot and then also be able to be the defensive pest that he is, they're going to cause a lot of problems in the series. You know, first game of the series today, obviously struggled. He was 2 of 10 from the field, 2 of 8 from 3. It's like, oh, Herb, we're going to need a little bit more from you, bud. You know, if you're going to shoot 8 threes, can you give me 4? Can you give me 3, 4, please? Just don't shoot 2 of 10. You know, the other shots, don't shoot 2 of 10. But yeah, they're going to need Herb Jones to be massive. I think he's the X factor for them. And I think on the other side, it's going to be Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey's the X factor for, you know, the Thunder, which I also think comes down to the three ball. Both guys, it's the three ball. Can they hit who's going to hit the three ball more and who's going to hit it consistently? Because Josh Giddey, he's a great player for the Thunder. But it also comes down to teams can play him off the court because they'll just sag off him. And if he's not hitting the three, teams are more than happy to say, hey, Josh Giddey, play yourself off the court. And today's tough game. You know, first game of the series, 19 minutes, 2, 3, and 3. You know, it's a toughie. But who's going to be the more consistent out of Herb Jones and Josh Giddey? Those are my two X factors. But I think the star, especially on the Pelicans with no Zion, I think is Ingram. And I think he's going to have to show up more come game two. But let us predict all the game twos. Now, I said I was going to wait to the end of the episode. Here we are. So let's give you a breakdown on and predictions for all the game twos. All right. So here we go. Cleveland Cavaliers versus Orlando Magic game two in Cleveland. I'm taking the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think they're going to win that. Then I've got game two between the Suns and the Timberwolves. I am going to take the Suns to tie that series. I think that the Suns are going to come out with better effort. They're not going to be out-rebounded, out-muscled, out-efforted again. Frank Vogel will not let that happen. Devin Booker will have a big-time game. I'm predicting Devin Booker 30-plus points. You should too. This is not financial advice, but Devin Booker 30-plus points and a Phoenix Suns W. Phoenix ties the series and takes us back to Phoenix for game three. Then, Knicks versus Orlando Magic. Game two. I think that the Philadelphia 76ers did enough in game one. I don't think that Miles McBride and Josh Hart are going to shoot as well as they did. I believe that the 76ers played, they had spurts in that first game where they played and they were the better team for, I'd say, more than 50% of the time. I think they're more than capable of doing it, and I think they will do it. Nick Nurse and the Philadelphia 76ers get a win in New York game two, tie the series up and take us back to Philadelphia for game three. Then game two in the Nuggets versus the Lakers. The Lakers have lost the Nuggets 9 straight times. I believe that it is going to be 10. I am going to take the Denver Nuggets to win that game. I'm going to say it's going to be a little bit more of a closer one this time. Obviously, it was 11 points this time. I know 11 points doesn't really reflect how the game really was, but I think it's going to be a lot closer. I think we might be within about 5 points. So I'm going to take the Nuggets by 5 points in this one. And I'm going to say that this game comes down to the last minute where the Denver Nuggets out-execute the Lakers and win that game, go to LA with a 2-0 lead. Then we go to the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. The series, as I said, was going to be tough for the Heat without Jimmy Butler. Without Jimmy Butler, it's 10 times harder. I think the Boston Celtics probably beat them again. Probably not by 20 points this time. I'm probably going to say a little bit less. I'm going to say take the 9 plus 9.5. I'm going to say give me the Celtics by 10. Give me the Celtics by 10. I think they won by 20, half that. Don't win by 10 this time. Which takes us to game two of the Mavericks and the Los Angeles Clippers. I think Dallas in the second half showed they came to the party. They showed up in the second half. They came with the intensity that they needed to at the beginning of the game in game one. And I think they'll bring that intensity that they brought in the second half from minute one in game two. And I think this could be a reverse blowout. I think they lost by 12 to the Clippers in game one. I'm going to take them to win by 10 plus in game two. I think Kawhi's not going to play either, so I'm definitely taking the Dallas Mavericks to win game two and take and it'd be 1-1 heading to Dallas. Then the Indiana Pacers and the Milwaukee Bucks, another tough game two. Obviously, Giannis, I think, is not going to be available for game two, but we're still going to be in Milwaukee. From what I saw in game one, I still think that obviously I had the Bucks. I still have the Bucks winning the series, and I'm also going to have them winning game two. I think that the Pacers, if they are to win any games, which I believe that they can, I think they'll win those games in Indiana. I don't think they'll win a game in Milwaukee. That's just my opinion. So I'm going to take the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm going to say this time it's going to be a little bit closer. Same thing as I said with the Mavericks. They brought the intensity in the second half that they should have started off the game with. I think the Pacers are going to bring the intensity much, much more. Obviously, they're not a team. They've shown us no ability to defend in the regular season. And it's hard to turn the switch on and become a defensive juggernaut in the postseason if you didn't establish those habits in the regular season. But they should do enough of a job. They should probably score a little bit more, be a little bit more efficient, make some adjustments, especially with the championship winning coach and Rick Carlisle. So with that being said, I'm still taking the Bucks, but I think that the Bucks probably win by less this time. I'm gonna take the Bucks by 6 in this game too. Then the New Orleans Pelicans versus the Oklahoma City Thunder. As I said about Devin Booker, I think him and Brandon Ingram are really good players. Brandon Ingram, I doubt he's going to shoot 5 of 17 again. I think he's going to come out with a vengeance. He's going to be coming out aggressive in that game. And I think the Pelicans as a whole are going to try bully the Thunder a little bit more, be much, much more physical. And I think they're going to be able to get the W this time. And I think this time I'm going to take the Pelicans to win game two by 7. Pelicans win game two in Oklahoma by 7. So those are your predictions for game two. And just like that, that is episode 23 of the Dunk Dynasty podcast. But I actually have to shout out something first. Shout out to all the home teams. Shout out to all the home teams that clutched up 8-0. Home court advantage is a hell of an advantage these playoffs. And we'll see if it continues to pay dividends come these game twos. But special shout out to everyone who's continually listening to the podcast. Thank you so much for the support. Going to keep rolling these episodes out in the playoffs. If you've got any questions, you want to roll them out, feel free to leave them on our Instagram comments, Facebook comments, and on TikTok, everywhere that you find this podcast. As I always say, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Music, we're on Google Podcasts. You know, we're everywhere. Spotify, brother, we are there. You know, continue to show us love, continue to show us support. We really do appreciate it. Share the podcast with your family and friends if you enjoy it. And please keep leaving reviews on Spotify, because the more you review, the better. More people join the army, the Dunk Dynasty army. We need more people in the army. Not the National Army, the Dunk Dynasty army. That army too, but this army too as well. Thank you so much for the support. And also, give comments on the theme song. If you like the theme song, whether or not you like it, whether or not you don't, it's nice little innovation to see. Yeah, you know, give us a little bit of a start, a little intro to the podcast. Thank you so much for the support, and see you on episode 24, where we discuss all the game twos. So that should be fun. But catch you on the next one. Over and out. Theme song, do your thing, baby.